Technorama episode 588, Love is in the Air, or Blame It on the Dog! Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, hey, thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And if you're a returning listener, we appreciate it even more. 588 shows. Whew. I'm Chuck Tomasi in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Joining me across that virtual table is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm a little exhausted because I've been trying to keep up with the YouTube or the Super Bowl ads as we're recording this.
I'm getting inundated with Star Trek videos. Watch this person react to Star Trek Picard, episode one.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, it's all over there. Watch these Easter eggs in Star Trek Picard, episode two. Here's a lawyer who talks about... I was like, come on.
Oh, yeah. I know you watch... That's the thing. I use Google News on my phone. It's an app, you know, pulls up Google News. And as soon as I accidentally clicked on like one of the celebrity news articles, then all of a sudden it starts thinking I'm interested in everything TMZ, you know, or like you said, I played one video where an attorney was reacting to
Measure of a Man.
Yep. Yes, thank you. And then all of a sudden, like you said, I started getting all these attorney videos reacting to everything, every court case you've seen on TV.
A five-year-old reacts to Star Trek Picard.
Okay, that was cute. That was cute.
I didn't even finish that one. No.
The eight-year-old, he wasn't... Okay.
I got partway through and went, no, I'm done on the bathroom. It's time to go.
He was cute. Yeah,
that's
right.
That's most of my YouTube time. I'll be honest. That's when I watch most of my YouTube videos is taking a crap.
Good to know.
And on that note, there's no video for this show this weekend because our video engineer Donna is still out of town. That means I'm a bachelor with my bachelor cat. So that's that's pretty much been the last couple of weeks. So
this coming week, whenever you say, "Hey, watch this video," I know you've been a regular guy and did your thing.
If I'm going to try and stay regular, with enough prunes. And there's our potty humor for the week.
Yeah. So you're getting to know us really well.
This is like the old days when we just sat down and recorded an audio show.
I don't have to look pretty for the camera.
I mean, you're on camera. We're still talking face to face for the most part.
Yes. Well, actually, I always thought that helped, at least seeing you across the room.
It's virtual nice to room. See you too. We didn't even see each other for the first 10 months of doing podcasts together.
No. I think I saw a picture of you and that was it.
A little thumbnail.
Yeah, a little thumbnail. You know what? It's funny is at work, I've seen the same thumbnail for some employees, and it's been like 6 years since I've been at ServiceNow. I'm like, surely they can update their picture.
I think you can. You got to go to Workday to do it, and then it imports across the rest of the stuff. They automatically updated mine when I got my new security badge.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't even ask. I was like, there it is. I'm like, well, it's a good thing I was wearing the green and green for the green badge. But let's move on.
I have to remember that when I go to the office next time.
Yay!
Feedback.
Letters. Feedback. Oh, we get feedbacks. We get your
letters. Flea bags.
Mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh boy.
Mailman.
Mail today.
We don't have any emails or voicemails from you. I was looking back in the archives and noticed that I found a hard drive from like 2007. We used to get 15 voicemails after every show.
Oh,
it was incredible. We had a separate voicemail show back then.
Yeah, I was going to say enough to facilitate a new show.
That was amazing. And now it's like one every 6 months.
I know.
Times have changed. We understand you are very busy, dear listener, and we appreciate you giving us your time to at least listen
really.
To this.
I don't understand that.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Okay, our question this week is, what's very cheap today, but it will be very expensive in 20 years? We posted that to the Technorama Facebook page. If you're out there, go ahead and like that page, and you can get this question, or Craig or I will reshare it. We got one from Tim Seelan, says, Windows 7 computers. I heard somebody sold an original iPhone for like $10,000. That's
what?
Crazy. Yes, it was like,
how could, what can you do with it nowadays?
I don't even think it had 3G back then. I don't know what it was.
There's no app store. You're stuck with the apps that were on it.
Exactly. You could make calls.
500 songs in your pocket. What are you going to do with it?
I don't know. It was big and round and kind of clunky. All right. By today's standard, of course. Actually, it wasn't that big. It was. Anyway.
No.
Digital Dan Hook responds, Gmail, gasoline, and clean water. Gmail will be very expensive in the future?
Wait, what? I hope not.
Okay. Thomas Kircher says gasoline. I would probably expect that as well. 20 years?
I don't know. Well, maybe 20. Yeah, because I think electric's going to be a big thing.
20 years ago?
I think electric's going to be a big thing. So coming up.
It will be. And I really hope we can cut down on greenhouse gas emissions soon. Not just we as in the United States, but other countries as well.
Well, if electric goes like it keeps going, there's not going to be that many people buying gas. So to make gas available, it's going to be more expensive. So that makes sense.
I think we ought to just run out of gas. That'll solve that problem. Then we'll have no choice. Stephen Wetchie says water. John Kratzer says food. And Alexis Duran says air. Air will be very expensive.
We've covered most of the elements here.
He's been watching Spaceballs.
Yeah, food, water.
He's gonna get.
I had a couple of responses on my own share.
What'd you get?
Freedom.
Freedom will be expensive.
I think it always is.
Freedom's never free.
Yeah. I would throw in privacy.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you think privacy is right now it's an inalienable right, but it sounds like everybody's sharing data and stuff, you're going to end up having to pay for it to keep it.
Mike Will says cable TV, to which JT replies, says, what world are you living in today? It's not cheap today. I'm suspicious whether cable TV will still be around in 20 years, be honest.
The hardcore people I know that are on cable are even asking me about cutting over. Mike says, no,
you aren't thinking right. It is expensive today. It'll be even more so in the future, leading us to remember the days you only paid $150 a month.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, good times.
Oh, I have some comments that didn't. Victor Cajao says live musicians. They'll all be dead in 20 years.
Oh, wait. AI is going to replace them all?
Danthal Ferenben says buying votes. Steve Gingras says cars with combustion engines, manual transmissions, and steering wheels will be extremely expensive.
Okay.
I thought Jack had, this isn't the one. Jack Mangan responded with something in the Technorama room, but he did not. All right. So
he
appreciate
to pick it up. Oh my gosh.
No, maybe he deleted it. I swear I saw something. Oh no, it was my, today is, as we record this, is February 2nd, 2020, which is a palindrome.
Yeah,
a number of formats, whether you do it in year, month, day, you know, it's 2020, 2020, 2020, 2020, 2020. So you can reverse it in a number of formats, and it's crazy how many different ways you can do that. And Jack said, you know, I had a plan to go to the Panama Canal. You haven't heard that one before?
No, I have not.
All right, I'm going to look it up real
That's
quick.
That's a new one to me. That's a new
Panama
one.
Canal.
I mean, palindrome. I know what it is. Oh, palindrome.
There's a palindrome for the Panama Canal. It says, a man, a plan. Okay, this is not the right one. A man, a plan, a cam, a yak? No. You know, it's...
Oh, I see. You're talking about rearranging the words.
No, it's not just rearranging the
letters. I mean the letters.
The palindrome is a man, a plan, a canal, Panama. You could, if you reverse that, it's a palindrome as well. A man, a plan, a canal,
sure,
Panama. So yeah, we went to the Panama Canal last February, so that's why I remember it. In fact, a year ago. Wow, that was a year ago already that we were at the Panama Canal. Crazy, man. All right, that's our feedback question for this week. We will give you another one at the end of the show, and we'll post it online as well. And maybe Donna will be back next week to do this on video.
Maybe.
Which leads us right into the history.
Oh, boy.
Get ready to strap in. On this day in history for February 5th, 2020, this is the 36th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 330 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1869 that the largest alluvial gold nugget in history, called the Welcome Stranger, is found in Moilaigul, Victoria, Australia.
And February 5th, 1907, Belgian chemist Leo Baekeland announces the creation of Bakelite. I wonder where he got that name from. The world's first synthetic plastic.
That was that brown brittle stuff they made like old radios out of. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That's Bakelite. Yep.
I see. Okay.
107 years ago today, Greek military aviators Michael Moustousis and Aristides Moratinus performed the first naval air mission in history in a Fairman MF-7 hydroplane.
And Charlie Chaplin, Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks, and D.W. Griffith launched United Artists on this date in 1919. And little known fact, my middle name comes from Douglas Fairbanks Sr.
Okay, so there was Douglas Fairbanks Sr. He was the one who co-founded United Artists.
Yes.
Douglas Fairbanks Jr. and then Michael Douglas. I'm thinking of Douglas. I got the Douglas part right.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Kirk Douglas and Michael Douglas. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Close.
Yeah. My alternate realities just kind of collided for a second. They're good now.
Yeah.
On February 5th, 1924, the Royal Greenwich Observatory begins broadcasting the hourly time signals known as the Greenwich Time Signal. Good name. Good name.
Yeah, good name. A hydrogen bomb known as the Tybee Bomb is lost by the U.S. Air Force off the coast of Savannah, Georgia, never to be recovered on this date in 1950.
There's a hydrogen bomb out there somewhere.
Wait a minute. It sounds funny. Never to be recovered on this date in 1958.
It was lost in 1958. So wait, my parser rearranged the words. It's
I have a friend who
lives on Tybee Island.
Do you? I remember reading that they thought they detected it, but I don't think they ever found it.
Okay.
Yeah.
February 5th, 1971, astronauts land on the moon in the Apollo 14 mission. Woohoo!
Right.
Thank goodness after that wonderful Apollo 13 movie.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out on this date to German mathematician and physicist Gaspar Schott, born on this date in 1608.
And Austrian mineralogist, geologist, and physicist Wilhelm Karl Ritter von Heidinger was born 225 years ago today.
That was one of your better ones, actually. He's learning. American engineer inventor. He invented the Maxim gun. His name is Hiram Maxim. He was born on this date in 1840.
And John Boy Dunlap, the Scottish businessman, co-founded Dunlap Rubber, was born on this date 180 years ago today.
After Wilhelm Karl Ritter von Heidinger, it's Dunlap.
Dunlop. Yeah.
The tires, man. Don't you ever watch like racing?
And I know what it is.
The little Dunlop tire thing. February 5th, 1878, French engineer and businessman founded Citroën André. This is really weird the way this puts us together this week.
No kidding.
André Citroën. He's the guy who founded Citroën.
Citroën.
That great car you find in a lot of countries like the UK and Malaysia.
That's right. American physicist, academic, Nobel Prize laureate Robert Hostetler was born on this date in 1915.
Red Buttons, the American actor, was born 101 years ago today.
101. Also turning 83 is Estonian-American astronomer and mathematician Alar Tomir.
Also born on the same date in 1943, American engineer and businessman founded Atari, Nolan Bushnell's birthday.
Yes. Thank you, Nolan. And also turning 73 today is American engineer and astronaut Mary Lee Cleave.
American actress Barbara Hershey is 72.
And American actor and director Christopher Guest, born on this date in 1948.
Also born on the same date in 1969, American singer, songwriter, dancer, and actor Bobby Brown. You are just slightly older than Bobby Brown.
Yikes.
Every little step I take.
Yeah, just about, what, a month.
Listener birthdays this month include February 1st, Matt Baum, a.k.a. Racer X from Pittsburgh, PA. Brandon Kirkwall from Minnesota is also on the 1st. The 2nd has three birthdays. Gary Lindros, whose signed punch card just happens to be on the top of the stack right here.
Really? Oh,
I'm cleaning out the studio, and I'm not getting rid of these, but I want to make sure they're safe. And it's like, oh, there's this card. That's cool.
Yeah.
Chuck Provenzano, a.k.a. Podlurker, a.k.a. Chuck's evil twin, is also on the 2nd. And Oreo Cookie Monster is also on the 2nd. The 3rd has Ewan Campbell McGregor. Ewan McGregor? Does he listen to this? Okay.
Sure, why not?
Chad W. Smith from Chattanooga is on the 7th, along with Byron, the big BS in PA. And Jan Scott from Yorkshire, UK. Podcast Mike Wills on the 9th. Zach Agulian and Appleton is on the 10th, and Drace is also on the 10th. Happy birthday to all of you. That's the way it was on this date in for February 5th, 2020. Look at that. We did it on time. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, because if it's your birthday and we didn't get a shout out to you, well, happy birthday anyway to you, whether you're on the list or not. We wish you all the very, very best, and get your name on the list and we'll give you a shout out next year. Or if your birthday is like next week, hurry, go over there now. Yeah. Chuckchat.com/wiki.
You got time. Yeah. I was just saying that, it was perfectly timed. We've had 588 episodes to practice.
You know, we goof around a lot on this show. And I don't know how many listeners are aware that Craig and I also do a webinar on a monthly basis for work. So a little more on the professional side. We had some interesting feedback on that one this month. One guy said, I like how Chuck was much more professional this time than goofing around.
Whoa.
The other one said, Chuck needs to get a little more serious. Stop screwing around.
Which Chuck is showing up on this episode today? Yeah. That's kind of weird.
We'll go over that feedback on Tuesday at our weekly
Chuck
meeting.
Chuck was serious. He needs to loosen up. So, that's interesting.
I don't know what they want. They want more silliness, or they want more...
What you're going to have to do is just roll a dice and see which one you get. Yeah.
I rolled a 1 again. All right, let's get into the news.
Good news, anyone?
All right, why don't you take the first news?
Okay, so scientists snap the closest ever view of the sun.
It's hot!
Yeah, just think, just when you think that you've seen every view of the sun, you got one that's a little closer. So researchers have snapped the best resolution view of the sun ever, courtesy of the Daniel K. Inouye.
We'll go with that.
Inouye 4mm solar telescope. The image, which resolves features as small as 18 miles wide, or 30 kilometers, is an unprecedented glimpse of what the surface of the sun really looks like. Typical images of the sun look like this, and there's a picture here in the article, so go check it out through our show notes.
You see the full sphere, and it looks like somebody with freckles.
Yeah, pretty much. It's captured by NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory and is in geosynchronous orbit above the Earth. This sort of image shows a certain amount of detail, but it's missing a lot. Partly the consequence of being shot from 93 million miles away. Then again, the SDO is also in orbit, which we know typically allow for better viewing conditions than any ground-based telescope. What allows the Inouye solar telescope to see such detail compared to the SDO? Adaptive optics, location, and sheer size. That 4 meters, typically 4.24, the Inouye is the largest solar telescope on Earth and is located in Hawaii one of the best known locations for a clear sky viewing of the, during the day. Mm-hmm. The situation appears to be analogous to the relationship, between Hubble and some of our largest ground-based telescopes. Hubble has a 2.4 meter lens, while the European Extremely Large Telescope, currently under construction in Chile, will have a 39.3 meter.
I thought Hubble was bigger than 2.4. I thought each one of its little hexagonal things were 2.4.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Hmm. Anyway, if you go down and scroll just a little bit, it looks
Hubble.
Almost like...
I'm sorry, I was thinking Keck. Never mind. Hubble. No. Yes, 2.4 on Hubble makes sense.
So, moving along a little bit, if you look down at the picture, it looks like you're looking at a zoomed-in picture of some popcorn or some kind of styrofoam.
It's the flagship for Sirius. I am Baylock. That's what I see.
But yeah, you can go check out the picture. It's really cool. And I thought the SDO would get some really good pictures. I thought it was actually in orbit around the sun. Like around near Mercury.
No. If it's in orbit around us, then it's not around the sun.
Well, I understand that. I mean, I just thought we had a solar observatory, and I thought it was around the Mercury.
We flew it into the sun.
Yeah, gone. Here's your close up.
Speaking of telescopes that are no more, from Space and Science, actually from CNN.com in their Space and Science section. We have an article about the little telescope that could has retired. It changed how we see the universe. For 16 years, Spitzer Space Telescope acted as the infrared detective, observing things otherwise invisible, including exoplanets and distant galaxies. Here are some of the best images. You can find those on our show notes. If you go to chuckchat.com/technorama, click on episode 588. You will see the second link in the news story will take you to some awesome space porn.
Space porn.
It is.
It is.
Galaxies and planets and...
Well, I thought it was... the reason I picked this article is because I thought it was apropos to at least give it a little bit of credit because they just recently decommissioned it.
After 16 years of incredible discoveries, NASA's retiring Spitzer Space Telescope. It's going to gently into that good night slumbering against the background of stars, the very ones it helped study. The infrared telescope completed science activities on Tuesday, relayed back data on Wednesday... And on Thursday, it said, thanks for all the fish.
Yeah, that's right.
It will continue to orbit the sun at times trailing behind Earth and at other times ahead of us in a debris field 160 million miles away, said mission manager Joseph Hunt. You can experience the final voyage through the VR experience. Spitzer is NASA's great... is in NASA's Great Observatories family, a collection of telescopes that operate at different wavelengths. Together, they provide a detailed look at the universe. Spitzer detects infrared light while Hubble captures visible in UV. Compton was designed for gamma rays and Chandra sees X-rays. Wow, they got the whole Geordi LaForge visor going on here.
Pretty much.
NASA's James Webb Telescope will be our new infrared eye in the sky when it launches next year. I'm putting that in air quotes, even though they didn't in this one.
I thought they missed their deadline a couple times already with that.
Yeah, well, if it was software, they'd be out of business.
Yeah, pretty much.
It will also be able to put up discoveries made by Spitzer. Oh, cool. It'll be able to follow up on Spitzer's discoveries. Spitzer has been a pathfinder of stars for us to investigate later, said Spitzer astrophysicist Farisa Morales. And although the mission itself is ending, the archive of data it provided can be mined for decades, said Michael Werner, Spitzer project analyst. So lots of cool stuff, lots of stuff to read in this article. We're not going to bore you with all the details, but if you love space like we love space, then you definitely want to go check this out. Poor Spitzer. It's only 16 years old and it's been decommissioned, although it probably had 20 years of life before it ever got off the ground.
At the Hubble. I mean, it's actually done really well. And what's it been up there for? 20
about
years?
25 I think it went.
Yeah, 25,
mid-90s, maybe even before that.
It's still cranking along.
I remember MST3K making fun of it.
In all fairness, one of its lenses is a little bit younger than the rest of it.
Not much. It was fixed within a couple of years.
Yeah, it was a couple of years. Yeah.
Hey, my glasses are newer than me.
Yes. Everything's newer than you.
No. Did you just call me older than dirt?
Yes. Oh, and trees.
Good. At least we're clear about that. All right, let's take a little break. We will be right back with the Hacks and Strange Stories and some more other cool stuff. How bacteria could run the Internet of Things. You won't want to miss that. That sounds like clickbait to me.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Erin Gray, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with AstronomyCast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
Look for them in iTunes.
How we know what we know. We went to school.
Yeah. We observe crap.
We study it. Yeah. We look through a telescope. That's how we know.
It's there. That's right.
I almost used that same phrase on the, actually I may have used it once or twice on my comedian live stream when I was first starting it out at work, but I changed it to get the answers behind the answers. All right, let's go on to, oh my goodness, we haven't done Hacks and Strange Stories in a while.
I know. Actually, I thought this one was right up your alley because you like the Internet of Things.
I like the Internet of Things. I like little controllers. How bacteria could run the Internet of Things from networkworld.com. Biologically created computing devices could one day be as commonplace as today's microprocessors and microchips, some scientists believe. Consider DNA, the carrier of genetic information and the principal components of chromosomes. It's showing promise as a data storage medium. Interesting. I'm going to make the font just a little larger for my old eyes. These glasses may be newer than me, but they're not new enough. A recent study suggests taking matters further and using microbes to network and communicate at nanoscale. The potential is highly attractive for the Internet of Things, or IoT, where concealability and unobtrusiveness may be needed for technology to become completely ubiquitous. That's a lot of big words that I just read.
I know. I'm impressed.
Advantages to an organic version of the IoT include not only the tiny size, but also the autonomous nature of bacteria, which includes inherent propulsion. Propulsion? There's, quote, an embedded natural propeller motor, the scientist from Queen Mary University in London explained of the swimming functions microbes perform. Okay, that they do. But what do we need swimming computers for? Let's read on. At this point, research is into the Internet of Bio-Nano Things, or IOBNT. This is starting to sound like the LGBTQ thing.
Yeah. You get confused about all the acronyms.
The alphabet of Internet is, maybe that's why Google chose Alphabet.
Yeah.
It's at an early stage, and Queen Mary University researchers are predominantly explaining how similarities between bacteria and computing could be exploited. But the study is intriguing. Quote, the microbes share similarities with components of typical computer IoT devices, unquote, wrote Ralph Kim and Stefan Posland in their paper published in the subject. This presents a strong argument for bacteria to be considered as a living form of the Internet of Things device. All right. There's some stuff I hadn't thought of before. Still not sure why we need propulsion in our Internet of Things, though.
And so when you're trying to swim away from the killer robots, they can chase you.
I know we've been looking at DNA computing. So this kind of goes, it will be interesting to see where this goes.
Didn't we have an article a few months ago, maybe a little longer, they were storing data in DNA and RNA?
Yes. Yes, that's
right. A lot of data. Yeah.
So this may be part of that, but IoT isn't so much about storage.
And you know, I just watched a TNG episode, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, where the guy was smuggling secrets in his DNA.
Oh,
so Star Trek, So Star Trek called it a long time ago.
So if I have a smart fridge and things start getting moldy, will it get smarter?
Only if you eat it.
Then I'll get smarter. I will eat its smartness. I will inherit its courage.
Right.
Eat the heart of a warrior kind of thing. If you eat the bacteria, the moldy bread from your fridge. Yeah,
that's exactly how it works.
Okay. You heard it here first. Sounds like we have a new skit to make.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Shout out to the chat room. We normally give a shout out to the chat room because we'd be doing this live on Facebook at 9:30 Eastern on Sunday night. But we have no video component, so we're not doing this live. We're recording it. Well, Craig and I are doing it live, but you're listening to it sometime later in the internet.
We're doing the heavy work. We're doing the heavy work so you don't have to.
And we will get it out to you. And if you happen to be around, go like the Technorama Facebook page, Technorama Podcast over on Facebook, and you will see us broadcasting there when we do the broadcasting thing. So we'd love to see you there. Let's move on to Remember When. Oh, yeah. There you go. What's been happening that we should be remembering when?
Well, this is actually Black History Month, and this article came across, so I thought it would be appropriate to bring it up. And it's the first African woman to obtain a graduate degree in physics was involved in a top secret U.S. mission. So February marks Black History Month, or a time when, and we as a society, remember the many contributions of African Americans in history of the United States.
Many contributions.
Oh, absolutely. Many. It is only fitting that we remember the work, life, and inspiration of Carolyn Parker, the first African American woman known to receive a graduate degree in physics and subsequently work on the top secret government project known as Manhattan Project.
He was the blue guy, right?
Sure. That's right. We saw his documentary on TV called The Watchmen.
How come we have not heard of Carolyn Parker before?
Well, I don't know. Let's talk about it. So Carolyn Parker was born on November 18th, 1917, to a very educated and established family in Gainesville, Florida. Science and accomplishments ran through her family. Her father was a medical doctor and also the second African-American to receive a PhD in business and from Harvard. And her mother's sister was one of the first African-American women to receive a PhD in geology. So she's got some pedigree going on there. Which is even more striking that only one out of Carolyn's five siblings didn't receive a degree. Excuse me. In mathematics or sciences.
Oh, the shame of that one child.
I know.
One in every family, people. This I know proves it.
That's right. Carolyn graduated magna cum laude with a degree in mathematics from Fisk University, and later on, master's in mathematics from University of Michigan. She went later on to do her doctoral studies at MIT, and received a master's degree in physics. But was not able to complete her PhD due to leukemia, which she thought to have gotten ill with the side effects of working on the radioactive material polonium.
That might be. That would suck. Yeah.
I mean that makes sense, I guess.
You thought we had occupational hazards?
Yeah, you know, typing all the time, carpal tunnel. In 1947, she became an assistant professor at Fisk University and passed away due to leukemia at the age of 47, striking 47 in 1966.
Wait, so she was born in late 1917. She died in 1966 at the age of 47. That doesn't add up. Or 1 year off somewhere. Even if she had died January 1st, 1966, she would have been 48. Turning 49 later that year.
Well, I guess someone's it depends on when she died. Up,
but anyway.
It depends on when she died. Maybe they were saying she was 47 at the time of her death. Well, you're right.
You
it was a
can't
year.
Be 47 in 1966. She couldn't All have right. been if she was born. Anyway, moving on.
All
right. Okay.
All shenanigans on that, but yeah. So anyway, I won't read everything else, but you can go finish reading about her. But she was in part of the Daytona Project, which is a top secret site for the Manhattan Project.
There's a lot of big name dropping in here. Albert Einstein, U.S. warning about the Nazi forces. Robert Oppenheimer. There's, cool stuff. Thank you, Carolyn Parker.
And you know, for every one you read about, like her, yep, there's like hundreds of others that have contributed also.
Oh, what was that movie? With the three ladies who did the calculations for NASA.
Yeah, they just named the street after them.
Yes. Not Number Crunchers. It's going to drive me nuts. I watched it on the flight back from Israel last spring. Go look it up and go watch it. It's definitely well worth the watch. But this, it's up the same alley of...
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures. That's what it is. Thank you. Underappreciated you saw it on the people plane. That you didn't know about the... What's that?
You saw it on the plane.
I did see it on the plane.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was recommended by the lady next to me. I said, we're not going to get any rest back here. She goes, oh, well, have you seen that movie? You should watch it. Like, Thank you, I did. Let's go, and speaking of thank yous, let's go thank our patrons, because they're awesome, and they make sure that this show keeps running. It's 2020, and we got bills to pay. We've got software upgrades to do. Thank you very much to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman.
Hey, we got beer to drink.
No, oh, we're sorry. Not buying beer with the Patreon money. We're not even paying anything at Dragon Con with Patreon money.
No, I'm just kidding.
This all goes in a super secret account that Craig's got. Annual bills to pay for the processing that we do on the audio. So if it sounds good, because your money helps pay for those bills too. Lots of services and whatnot. Where was I? I did Kyle, Abner, Ben, Mike Wills. Yes, that Mike Wills that has a birthday coming up. Mega Podtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros. Yes, that Gary Lindros that has a birthday coming up. Sound like a broken record here. John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
Wait.
Yes.
Miss Technorama told me not. No, Miss Technorama told me not to say, oh, that John Noble. So I won't say it.
Why did you just not say it?
That's right. I won't say it.
Chris MC, Alexis Duran. Yes, that Alexis Duran that has a birthday coming up. Wow. We got a whole bunch of them. If it's your birthday, you should be a Patreon person, I guess. Let's finish out the roll call here. Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorga Schwarowin, Amber Elstad, thank you, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, Stephen Wetchie, Dean Jensen, Dandy Man, NCAF1, Matt Baum, Christina, and Brian Brown. Thank you, everybody. Make sure that you have your address, your postal address, on the Patreon page, because Craig and I will be sending out postcards again from the Star Trek cruise.
Or if it's changed, updated. I think it's required, but I can't remember if I made it required.
We want to make sure you get not only your special audio content, but you get your annual postcard, and you get your name enshrined on the show. So there's some advantages. We do appreciate it, and we want to make sure that you are taken care of. Here we are.
Let's
fade that out. Okay, goodbye. All done. And we like that music, too. If you want to be a Patreon patron, go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Get signed up for as little as a dollar a show. You can get that special RSS feed with that content that we're going to be recording right after this show. It's a response to one of our Patreon people's questions from a previous Patreon show. So it's kind of this conversation we got going now.
Yeah, they're actually listening.
One of them is, anyway.
Yeah, at least one.
Let's do the Geek Library. Whose turn is it? Mine or yours? I can't remember.
I'll go for it. My voice is starting to give out, but I'll go for it.
Okay.
So, 5 soon-to-be trends in artificial intelligence and deep learning.
Deep learning.
Yeah, deep learning.
I wish I had some reverb on that one.
That's right. So, artificial intelligence is frequently discussed, yet it's too early to show real gains. AI's major headwind is the cost of investment, which will skew returns in short term. When the turnaround occurs, however, companies are making the investment can expect the reward disproportionately, with a wide performance gap. In a recent report, McKinsey predicts AI leaders will see up to double the cash flow. So let's talk about what some of the five things that they say are trends that are coming up in AI.
Okay.
So training AI to know what it does not know. So the next decade will determine if humans or machines are better at making a medical diagnosis as more healthcare companies turn to AI for accuracy. One problem that QRI is working on is how to train a model to know when it doesn't know, which I would imagine that's kind of hard to figure out.
Sounds like one of those business meetings where somebody says, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. Or the first step to wisdom is realizing what you don't know. As a matter of fact, I just saw Data talking about that. See, I've been on a TNG kick lately, probably because of Picard. Anyway, so humans can intervene and to avoid the miscommunication of unknown diseases. This approach is known as physician in the loop. So we got to know what we don't know, or at least the AI does. Reducing call center burden. You know, all this money, it seems like it'd be like the last thing you want is to worry about a call center. But UnitedHealth received 36 million calls in 2017. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah, with 7.6 million calls transferred to a representative.
How can AI help with this?
Yeah,
37 received?
36 million calls received.
And 27 transferred. And
7.6 calls were transferred.
Oh, that's a fraction.
So 7.6 knows how, those people know, hey, keep hitting zero till you get somebody.
Here are your menu options again. Zero. Here are your menu options again.
Yeah. So the AI platform solution involves deep learning for a pre-check portal and claim queue and some other information to kind of figure out what to do with your call. Number three, retail giants making big AI investments. So retail, you know, of course, I imagine this has to do with shifting inventories and all that kind of stuff. I'm just taking a guess there. Retail has a large presence in conference with Walmart Labs, Procter & Gamble, mm-hmm. and Target presenting ways to ways they plan to make the retail experience more optimized. Perhaps the companies are being more careful to embrace the technology and AI after the last decade ushered in many competitors who stole critical turf.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Amazon. So imagine a shopping experience where the carts are plentiful, cashiers are always open, blah, blah, blah. There's always somebody to help you and your stuff there in stock, you know, could happen. So
I was surprised to find out that B&H Video is still in business. The photo cell. It's not B&H Video. It's B&H is the name of the company. They started in 1973, 72. It's funny because I forget if I was on YouTube or LinkedIn, but I saw one of their ads and it said, the year is 1973. And it was like, okay. I watched the ad just because they had this little history lesson and I'm like, wow, I didn't know all this stuff about B&H. And then I realized, it's surprising they're still around in the age of Amazon.
Oh yeah, they're big. Actually, they've got a big superstore.
They do computers mm-hmm. and printers and a whole bunch of stuff that mm-hmm. you know they're kind of the Best Buy, but better.
Yeah, they're pretty good. You know what's funny is I think it's primarily a Jewish company, and then there's been times I had the money to buy a camera, and I went on there. I decided I was going to buy it from B&H, and they're closed for a holiday. I'm like, whoa!
The website was closed.
Yeah, they don't take any orders. It was a Jewish holiday, wouldn't allow it. So, or I guess it wasn't allowed somehow. You just couldn't even take the order. So, yeah, anyway.
B&H Photo Video, also known as B&H Photo, and B&H is an American photo and video equipment retailer founded in 1973, based in Manhattan, New York City, where it was the B&H stands for Blimey and Herman, the founders of the store. They've moved several times, but
Yeah, they got a big store in New York or someplace like that.
There was another one. It was like 52nd Street Video or something, or 52nd Street Photo. That
rings the bell.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still around or not, but they were another big one. Like
B&H bought them.
Probably moved into their store.
Who knows?
So, a lot of cool stuff about AI coming up, and yes, it's going to be the future, and I'm passing it to the next generation because my son-in-law is all about neural networks and artificial intelligence, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I know there's a lot of movement in that area. So, number four, AI could be the answer to restoring privacy. Privacy has been in the headlines lately as regulators and social media users begin to question what is fair exchange for a free service. And while the battle is nearing 2 years since Cambridge Analytica, other companies are creating AI recommendation engines so powerful that little information is needed about the person making the choice. Their preference is enough to determine what to recommend next.
Hmm.
So anyway, prepare to be blown away by AI assistance.
I'm sorry. I just keep thinking of how difficult it is just for Alexa to turn the silly living room lights off.
I know. I'm telling Google, I said, turn on the adjustable lamp. Bink. And it finally comes on. I have to say it twice. Like,
Alexa, turn off living room. There are a number of things that have the name living rooms. Which one did you want? And I say living room. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So one time I tried short circuiting it. I said, Alexa, turn off living room. Living room. She said, there's a number of things that share the name living room, living rooms.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, you know what's funny is I had a routine in Google Assistant. You can set up a routine. So when I came in my little office in the morning, I wanted to say, open shop. So I say, okay, Google, open shop. Stop it. And you know what's funny is he goes, there's a number of open shops in your area. I'm like, no, I want to say, I said, open shop.
Yeah.
And it worked for a while. And then finally it started trying to give me results of what's open around me. I'm like,
I have a lamp called left bedside because Donna's on the right side. I'm on the left. And I say, Alexa, turn on left bedside. She says, adding it to your cart. Like, what did I just add to my cart?
A case of paper towels. There's like
here's a watch lamps. Band. I don't know. What?
There's like 15 lamps in your cart.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
So AI is also getting scary because it's
we have
misunderstanding.
We have to get the language understanding first before we get the AI involved.
Yeah.
All right. That takes us pretty much through the content that we had planned for this week. I thought I mailed you a link or something, or did that get into the show? Didn't I send you something and said, wow, this looks like Technorama material?
You know what? We'll find out next week.
All right.
Tune in next week and we'll find out what the lost article was.
Our stuff is timeless, unless you go to that space news stuff. That's pretty dated. Our question of the week this week is, what is your first memory of the internet? Didn't we ask this before?
No.
Okay. Maybe we should ask him, what's your first memory of Technorama?
I'll tell you what.
Leave it at this one.
Okay, fine.
What's your first memory of the internet?
I'll save it. No. You don't want to hear it.
I think we did talk about this once before.
I think we asked a question similar to this.
The internet as in the internet, not as in, not the web.
I guess maybe the first time you sat down and started doing something. I don't know.
I mean, the web is part of the internet, but it's not the internet. So I know most of our listeners are smart enough to make that distinction, but we'll see. We'll see what they come back with.
I know what mine is.
Okay. Because I know my first memory of the web. I'm trying to remember what my first
memory. I'll see if I can remember it by next week.
I mean, man, I was doing FTP long before the web was coming along. Do Usenet news groups count? I guess they do.
Why not? Yeah.
And there's different components what was the first memory of the internet? Okay, I got to think about that because there's a lot of
wide
old
open.
Fragments before anyone really even called it the internet.
Well, I would argue that this is kind of wide open. So
Okay.
Whether it was you browsing a web page for the first time or, you know, hitting up a IRC channel. You know, I don't know.
Alrighty. We'll go with that. And with that, we run out of show. Oh, look. Music here right on time.
Oh, wow. See? 588 episodes and we got it down.
Let's see if we can get this ending part down. All right. If you want to find us, you can find us over at chuckchat.com/technorama. Doesn't it drive you nuts still when people say backslash?
Yeah.
Like, who proofreads your radio ad anyway? You can get a hold of us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT, as in Chuck Chat. As in Technorama at Chuck Chat is the email address if you don't want to call. Or you can't call from outside the U.S. Or your minutes are all used up. I don't know. I'm making it up as we go now. So find us on Spotify, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, all that stuff. Until then, Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101.